So welcome back to the Mind Body Her podcast. My name is Mia Schick. We're still getting used to saying that around here. If you haven't noticed, I did get married in the summer, so I have been gradually transitioning over into Mia Schick. So it's been a lot of work and getting used to saying that. But welcome to the podcast. On this podcast, we talk about all things women's health and wellness, business, and everything in between. And I'm really excited for today's podcast episode, all about supports for mental health, specifically anxiety, ADHD, depression, and low. I've been seeing this coming up pretty frequently in a lot of my sessions, especially as we are headed into the cooler, darker months. So lots of conversations. I'm like, how are we going to support our mental health as we head into a different season? And also just a lot of anxiety coming up and low energy as well. So I wanted to delve into each of these different topics and look at it from a bit of a different lens. And I just want to preface before we jump into it, I'm not saying that I'm so I don't want to diagnose anything. Obviously, we want to be speaking to our doctor and other practitioners, having different modalities in there, even medications. I just want to preface by saying that I'm not against any of these things. I'm just giving you a different light to look at some things and look at kind of what the root of the issue sometimes could be for people. And that can include things like our biology, our environment, our lifestyle, the mind-body connection, hormones, blood sugar. So we're going to be delving into each of those topics differently. So the interesting things with symptoms like anxiety and low energy, ADHD and depression is that a lot of the symptoms overlap. So that's why I'm really at looking at the root cause to help people get the support that they need. We'll also be talking about lab-based markers, specific diets, nutrients, supplements, deficiencies at the same time, and what to ask your doctor to run or to look in a different lens, more of a functional lens, looking at things like your hormones and even gut health as how that can relate to our mental health. So first and foremost, one of the things that every single client to do, whether they're feeling really good or not. I see a lot of low energy, I would say, specifically in my practice. Just about every client is looking for more energy. So just as a base point, I think everybody should be getting some basic lab work done at minimum per year. Again, even if you're feeling good. But what I always look at as just a base point with clients is number one is thyroid function. So typically with thyroid function, if you have signs or symptoms of low energy, depression, anxiety, you're having issues losing weight, your hair is thinning, you're cold all the time, these are all signs of hypothyroidism. So I always suggest going and getting a full thyroid panel. Typically, when you ask your doctor to check your thyroid, they will only check what's called your thyroid stimulating hormone. So the hormone from the brain to the thyroid, either telling it to, hey, you need to produce more hormones or less hormones, depending on what it picks up in the bloodstream. Doesn't give you a really great overview, and typically you won't get a full thyroid panel done unless your TSH levels are elevated. But the thing here, you guys, that I really want you to take home on this is there is a massive difference between falling within range and being in the optimal range. If I had a dollar for every single person that I saw that came across my practice and I say, hey, when was the last time you got some labs done? And they're like, oh yeah, not too long ago, you know, everything came back fine. Nothing was flagged. I'm like, cool. Can you send that over to me? And I'm like, your iron's off, your B12's off, your thyroid's creeping up higher than we want to be. These need to be looked at. And this is a lot of the things that are driving how you're feeling right now. With thyroid, with TSH levels, ideally we want that to be around 0.5 to 2.5. If you're creeping up to 3 or 4 plus, that is worth having a further discussion with your doctor about possibly running some more testing and taking a deeper look at what's going on with your thyroid. Because if your thyroid is off, you are going to struggle with your energy and with your mood. So really, really important. The other things I always get people to check is your iron. I would say 100% of clients that I have seen in the past 2 weeks alone have low iron. And same with what we talked about with thyroid. We want to be in the optimal ranges. One marker that I commonly look at is your ferritin levels. So ferritin is a protein that stores iron in the liver. For most women, getting that up to around 70 is where we like it to be. I will say the majority of people that I see are in the 30 mark, and on quite a few people have come in and they are a few points away from being anemic, never addressed. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about how low iron really influences our energy, our mood, and motivation. Even signs of low ferritin can be linked with suicidal ideation. So it's not something to play around with to have low iron levels. They absolutely need to be addressed and looked at. Now, there's a whole conversation around why are levels so low in the first place. The biggest things that I see correlating to that are, number one is obviously we're just not getting enough through food. I see a lot of fear around eating good quality red meat. I don't know if it comes from the diet industry that red meat's a little bit higher in calories and fats than things like chicken and fish and turkey. But I truly believe that having some quality red meat in the diet 2, 3, even 4 times a week can be very beneficial for overall health. Animal protein contains heme iron. Heme iron is the most readily absorbed. That's what our body likes to absorb. Non-heme iron, that's from plant foods, and not to say those are bad, but I do think having quality animal proteins in the diet is really helpful for that. You can also include organ meats. I'll be honest, I struggle with eating organ meats, so I get it. But if you are interested in playing around with that, getting a blend and blending organ meats in with ground beef can be really beneficial in boosting up your iron stores and overall nutrient content. That's the first one, just not getting it into our diet. The second thing that I see is a compromised digestive system. So you probably heard the term, you're not what you eat, you're what you digest and absorb. If you have an underactive stomach, you're not producing enough acidity, we're not releasing enzymes properly, we're not breaking down our food and absorbing it properly. If your iron's low, most likely your other minerals are going to be low at the same time. So we really need to be looking at optimizing digestion and making sure that we are absorbing those nutrients from the food. Furthermore, like dysbiosis, parasitic infections, imbalance of microbes in the gut, those pathogenic microbes like to feed off of iron. So also important to take a deeper look at maybe if there's some dysbiosis or parasitic infections going on at the same time. Okay, so please, please, please don't glaze over low iron levels. You need to get those bumped up. Other markers that I would suggest getting looked at is your blood sugar. So fasting glucose and insulin. If we have things like insulin resistance, meaning our body is not uptaking glucose and utilizing it for energy, you're going to feel tired. You're going to feel moody. So really look at your blood sugar, fasting glucose, fasting insulin. Ideally, these should be low in the morning after we haven't had anything to eat. If those levels are elevated, then that could be signs that we might not be. We should. Hemoglobin A1C is another one I commonly look at. So that's the average of what your blood sugar has done over the past 3 months. We'll talk about blood sugar further and how that influences our energy and our mood and our hormone health, even our weight, a little bit further as we go. Vitamin D. The most common thing that I hear from clients when they ask to get their vitamin D levels checked is, we're not going to check your vitamin D. Everybody is low on vitamin D and just take a supplement. And I mean, right or wrong with that, I do see low vitamin D levels a lot, especially with clients who have specific hormonal imbalance with things like PCOS and endometriosis. The benefit of taking a look at your vitamin D would then determine where you're standing at. Is that a cause of what's going on with some of your symptoms right now? And then it also would determine what your dosage is like. And in some cases, if you're really deficient, you could potentially go a little bit higher. But again, only do this under the scope of a holistic practitioner, a naturopathic doctor, your GP. B12 would be another one that I check quite frequently. B vitamins are really important for neurotransmitters and dopamine and serotonin production. So if your B vitamins or B12 levels are low, you're also going to feel tired as well. So just as a very base point, those are the things that I would ask your doctor to check. And I honestly feel like it just should be, if anyone's struggling with energy or mood or goes into the doctor saying they're feeling depressed or anxious, I just wish that they would automatically check those things, because a lot of times they're just not. And then we go on our way. And again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be using medications by any means, but I think we should be asking further questions. Of course, there are other things like inflammation and also our sex hormones that can influence our energy and mood, as well as cortisol. So I wanted to break those down even a little bit further. A big one would be cortisol dysregulation. I mentioned in for other podcasts that cortisol is like the buzzword of the last almost 2 years now. Whenever I speak about cortisol, especially online, videos blow up. People are asking questions about it. And there's a lot of misunderstanding around what cortisol actually is. I have a whole workshop on it. I have a cortisol protocol linked on my website for free, so you can check that out in further detail. But cortisol dysregulation is basically imbalanced cortisol levels at different points throughout the day. Cortisol is known as our stress hormone, and it's not all bad. I also like to think of it as our awake hormone. So that's what actually wakes you up in the morning, gets us going, and it gets us motivated. So it's not all bad. We just don't want our cortisol levels to be chronically elevated all the time. We don't want to be in that state of fight or flight consistently. Acute stress is okay. Our body should be able to handle it, and we should have some tools to bring our nervous system back down into balance. But for a lot of people, there's overlaps there with cortisol. It's not necessarily just stress that we had at work or at home. It can be layers. So things like maybe under eating, not eating enough protein and fiber, and not having balanced blood sugar levels. Low blood sugar can trigger a stress response in the body. So that's why we're going to hone in on the blood sugar piece of why it's so, so important, especially if you struggle with things like anxiety, also with ADHD as well. Low blood sugar can trigger symptoms of ADHD. With cortisol, we just want it fluctuating. So typically cortisol rises in the morning. It's highest around 11 or noon, and then it starts to decline as the day goes on so that our melatonin can kick in at night. And that's the balance rhythm. It can fluctuate depending on what's going on. But if our cortisol is dysregulated, so meaning maybe we have too high cortisol levels at the wrong times of day, maybe before night, so we have that wired but tired feeling, or maybe it's actually low. I've seen that quite consistently, especially on Dutch tests. So Dutch test is a hormone test. We'll talk about testing for cortisol. It's actually low cortisol levels all throughout the days. That is a sign that somebody is in what we call burnout, adrenal fatigue, HPA axis dysregulation. And so they're kind of flatlined. So they could sleep 8 hours and wake up and feel incredibly tired. They might be someone who gets very, very overwhelmed. Maybe they're sensitive to light and sound. Those are all signs that their cortisol levels are actually too low. And so you want to be very careful about treating high cortisol and low cortisol, especially if you're utilizing supplements and herbs and those things. As far as testing goes, for testing for cortisol, I get asked this question all the time. If you ask your doctor to check your cortisol levels, they'll check what's called your cortisol AM. So your cortisol levels are doing in the morning. So one singular point is, as I mentioned, they fluctuate. So only seeing them at one point of the day doesn't really give us a lot of information. And it's dependent on many different factors. When that test was actually taken, was it taken at 8 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock in the morning? Did you have anything to eat before that? Did you have coffee? Did you go for a workout? Lots of different factors that could influence that test. Ideally, we want to be testing our cortisol levels through urine or through saliva. And we want to check it at 4 points throughout the day. First thing when we wake up, mid-morning, mid-afternoon, before we go to bed. And if we're somebody that wakes up in the middle of the night, we would also check it then to see if it is cortisol that is waking us up in the middle of the night. Then we take that information and we put it on a graph and see where that curve is happening. Is our cortisol levels high in the morning when it should? Is it tapering off in the day, or is it higher or lower at certain points? And then we can go in with lifestyle supplements and nutrition supports to help with that. Furthermore, with sex hormones, a big one that I see also is low progesterone. So if you are somebody that struggles with PMS symptoms or even PMDD, so very low mood, depressed, especially before the cycle, usually around days 19 to 21, 7 days post-ovulation, our progesterone levels spike and then they drop off. That can lead to a lot of those issues with anxiety, insomnia. So we really want to be careful during that time to make sure that we are protecting progesterone, giving our body the nutrients that it needs, not having really high stress levels. If your cortisol is high, your progesterone most likely is going to be low. Same with testosterone. So the challenge with that is, yes, we want to know what those hormones are doing, but then it's not necessarily going in and being like, well, we're just going to fix low progesterone with some hormone replacement therapy. Sure, that can be helpful in the mid, but my question is always, Well, why is that hormone imbalanced in the first place? So typically when some of our sex hormones are low, then it can come from things like blood sugar imbalances and also heightened cortisol levels, because the body believes that if we are in a state of stress, that is the most important thing to focus on. And then everything gets put on the back burner, utilizes a lot of nutrients, a lot of resources to create those hormones, and in certain cases takes precursors that could be made, used to make testosterone and progesterone and estrogen, and takes it and makes cortisol with it. So really, really important to look at those two things, blood sugar and cortisol, when we have any hormonal imbalances. So low progesterone, just to, again, to recap, PMS symptoms, it obviously is going to happen with women as we start transitioning into perimenopause, menopausal years. Those hormones are naturally going to decline as our ovaries stop producing as much of those hormones. So that's naturally going to happen. I'm not against hormone replacement therapy. I definitely think that that can be supportive for women. And again, that's a conversation to have with your natural. Just furthermore on some nutrient deficiencies, we talked about some pretty common ones like vitamin D. Just to cover that one again, is vitamin D, you most likely should be taking a supplement form of vitamin D. I like it in liquid combined with K2, especially if you live in Canada where we don't see the sun a lot. You have to be taking vitamin D through the winter months. That's a non-negotiable. And for a lot of people, that means taking it through the summer as well. A lot of us are working inside, unless you're very diligent about exposing your skin to the sun at multiple points throughout the day and getting adequate vitamin D from the sun, then you're most likely probably going to need to top it up with a supplement. Omega-3 fatty acids. So those are our good healthy fats from things like salmon and fatty fish, avocado, nuts and seeds, olive oils, those sorts of things. That's absolutely critical for brain function. Making sure you get these things in through food first and foremost, and then we can layer in supplementation as needed. Every time I talk about supplements, people think that I'm telling them to take all of these things, and that's definitely not the case. Food first, always. That's where our body recognizes these nutrients from, and they have different cofactors help our body absorb these things. If we are taking too many supplements, it's just an overburden on the liver and just leads to very expensive pee. So be very mindful of how many nutrients or how many supplements that you are taking. Zinc would be another one. So zinc helps to support neurotransmitter function and mood. To use zinc specifically for myself, but also with clients who struggle with PMS, especially that week before the cycle, zinc citrate can be very supportive for mood. I just want to take that one with food. Sometimes it can be a little bit of a, it can give you some digestive upset. So take that one with food. Magnesium would be another one. A lot of us are deficient in magnesium. Typically, it comes from the soil that food is grown in, but a lot of our soil is very devoid of nutrients. And magnesium is absolutely critical for hundreds of functions throughout the body, and it helps to support GABA. It helps with relaxation, sleep, our energy. The two forms that I like are magnesium bisglycinate. So that is a very, very gentle form of magnesium. I like to use it at night before I go to bed to help with sleep. And then the other form is magnesium threonate. Use that one is for cognitive support. It crosses the blood-brain barrier. If you wanting to support with focus, I would have that one earlier in the day. Also very good for post-concussion. If you had a previous concussion, magnesium threonate can be very helpful for that and for memory as well. And then B vitamins. We talked about B12, but B complex can be very important for neurotransmitter synthesis. So again, with serotonin and dopamine, typically when we look at B vitamins, usually when they are in nature, they come together, not in singular form. So a B complex can be helpful for that. I personally like methylated B vitamins, and my husband and I have just been recently taking a methylated B vitamin and noticed a significant difference in our energy levels, especially. So those are some nutrients that you can look to support for mental and emotional health. So next, I want to get into blood sugar. I, with every single client, one of the first things that we focus on, whether they struggle with hormones, whether they struggle with mood or energy or weight, is always coming back to blood sugar. Blood sugar is really a key foundation for so many things, our energy, our mood, our hormone health. And when our blood sugar is off, that can lead to things like irritability, anxiety, brain fog, low energy, and even ADHD-like symptoms. if we're looking at imbalanced blood sugar, just to give you some examples, would be things like if we are having lots of refined carbohydrates or sugary things, especially first thing in the morning. So if you're starting your day with a coffee from Starbucks that has tons of sugar in it, or Tim Hortons, or if you're having things like muffins or a piece of toast with jam or even oatmeal with some fruit on it, these are all very high carbohydrates. They don't have a lot of protein or a lot of fiber, some fats to kind of buffer it. So what happens is we consume these high carbohydrate, high sugar foods. And don't get me wrong, sometimes these things are okay to have in moderation, but if we're doing it all the time, that's where we lead to a lot of issues. Foods that are high in carbohydrates, especially refined carbohydrates, they digest very, very quickly. And then we get that spike in blood sugar, but then comes the crash quite quickly afterwards. And that's when that can trigger that anxiety and that irritability. So ideally, we don't want these big dips and swings with our blood sugar. We want it nice and steady and stable. So that means that at every single meal, we have a combination of protein, fat, and fiber. That's the checklist I go through when I'm making my meals. The first thing that I pick is my protein, because I know that's what's going to keep me full and satiated, support better blood sugar, amongst many other things, my brain health, muscle mass, my metabolic rate. So protein is the thing that I pick first, and then I build the rest of my meals around it. Other thing is, I don't recommend going much longer than 3 to 4 hours between meals and snacks. I see a lot of people skipping meals, not having breakfast. 100% of clients that I've seen in the past 2 weeks are not eating anything for breakfast. So just having coffee and not eating anything until noon or 1 o'clock for different reasons. And to be honest, you guys, intermittent fasting can have a place and a purpose, and there's lots of benefits to it, but you want to be doing it the right way. And instead of actually skipping breakfast, you would actually want to pull back on your meal times into the evening. We don't actually need a ton of energy as we're winding down and going to sleep. You do need energy in the first part of the day, and especially having a high protein breakfast is absolutely key for regulating our cortisol levels, our hunger hormones, and keeping our blood sugar levels nice and stable. So one thing if you want to take away from this podcast is, if you're not eating breakfast, to start eating a high protein breakfast. I have a link to 6 high protein breakfast options on my website that you're more than welcome to download and check out. The really quick and easy ones. There's some smoothies, oatmeals, eggs, those sorts of things. But that one single thing can just make an absolute huge difference to your health. Other thing is just no naked carbs. That's one of my favorite sayings. I actually heard it, I think, from the glucose goddess. But that's basically taking your carbohydrates and pairing them up with something. So combining them with a protein or a fat, just to help it give it a little bit of staying power. Next thing that I wanted to touch on is the mind, body, spirit connection. I actually had that tattooed on me in Thai. What I really have come to learn being a holistic nutritionist is that we have to look at things from a more holistic standpoint and not just address the physical. We're not just addressing the nutrition. We're looking at all the different components that can influence our health. You can have the perfect diet and the perfect routine, but if you hate your job that you're going into every single day, you have a bad relationship where there's constant fighting, or you have somebody in your life that maybe is a little bit overbearing or even suppressive, those things are going to weigh on you. Sometimes they're harder to confront. It's easier to address our diet and exercise, and harder to look at those things, but really needs to be looked at from different standpoints. We also cannot exclude things like sleep. So poor sleep, if you're not getting a good night's sleep, under 6 hours can increase your cortisol levels the next day by up to 30%. It throws off your blood sugar. It throws off your hunger hormone. So really, really important to look after your sleep. I know this is a challenge, especially like I have lots of friends who are moms and they have little kids. So sometimes you just have to do the best with what you can. And if sleep is not a focus right now, or not able to get a good night's sleep, then it is focus on the other things that you are in control of, your movement and your nutrition. Talking about movement, so exercise actually increases dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, increases our energy. Really important to look at your exercise routine and make sure you're getting in some movement. One of the things that is absolutely underrated for mental health is going for a walk. I'm an advocate for walking, honestly, as much as you can, for blood sugar support, for energy, for digestive health, and it also increases the serotonin and dopamine and lowers our cortisol levels. I'm an advocate of getting out for a walk, especially after meals in the morning hours, to regulate those cortisol levels. Social connection and support. Isolation worsens depression and ADHD symptoms. And I know it can be easy just to want to stay home and not go out, especially if you're an introverted person, but social connections absolutely are imperative for mental health. So sign up for the class, go to the workout class, go for a coffee with your friends, get outside for some social connection. Even things like running errands and just being around other people can be really supportive for mental health. Last one would be purpose and meaning. So this just means engaging in meaningful activities, doing something for enjoyment, for fun, for pleasure, and feeling like that we have a purpose in life. Diet and lifestyle supports. So just some dietary considerations to keep in mind are anti-inflammatory foods. So things like leafy greens, berries, fatty fish, nuts and seeds, all really great for brain support, adequate protein that we've talked about. Just want to touch on this slightly. We'll be having a podcast coming out next week and talking a little bit more about protein and how much you actually need. I find a lot of women are actually under eating on protein. A good place to aim is, I would say, minimum 80 to 100 grams for most women. Obviously, this is going to depend on your age, your lifestyle, your exercise, what your goals are, but aiming for at least that could be a place to start. If you're getting around 50, 60 grams of protein per day, that's most likely not enough. We want to make sure we're eating carbohydrates. I'm not a huge advocate for cutting carbohydrates out of the diet, especially for weight loss purposes. As women specifically, we need adequate carbohydrates to support our brain health, our hormone health, thyroid health. So it's not about cutting carbohydrates out completely. It's about being strategic, picking the right carbohydrates that have fiber in it, squash, grains, vegetables, fruits, those sorts of things. And also, again, pairing it with protein and fiber to help mitigate blood sugar spikes and crashes. We obviously want to make sure that we are adequately hydrated, and even adding things like electrolytes to our water. I'm actually a big fan of just adding in a sprinkle of sea salt, especially first thing in the morning, can be incredibly supportive for energy health or energy in general. And avoiding things like ultra-processed foods, high sugar, and inflammatory fats. Lifestyle considerations. Consistent sleep schedule. 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night. Women need more sleep than men. And going to bed and waking up at the same time every single day. When we talk about cortisol and it being on cycle and how it fluctuates throughout the day, our hormones like to rise and drop, especially cortisol and melatonin, at the same time every day. Even on the weekends, I know it's a challenge for some people, especially if your job influences how early you're getting up. But honestly, going to bed and waking up at the same time is just a very simple life hack that can just improve so many things. Mindful movement. We don't want to exercise too much or too little. If you're over exercising and coupling it with undernourishment, that is a recipe for hormonal havoc. It'll increase your cortisol levels and definitely influence your mood. Walking, yoga, cardio, strength training, having a combination of different exercises, incorporating some stress reduction techniques, breath work, journaling, meditation. We want to look at limiting stimulants, too much caffeine, too much alcohol, especially if anxiety is present, regular exposure to sunlight for circadian rhythm and vitamin D. To recap on the supplements, magnesium, glycinate, or threonate, omega-3s, methylated B vitamins, vitamin D, probiotics. We didn't quite delve into gut health, but we'll talk about that a little bit further. Probiotics can also be supportive. So a lot of our serotonin is produced in the gut. So if we don't have enough good microbes or good bacteria in the gut, that can certainly influence our mood. Additional considerations, things like environmental toxins, endocrine disruptors can also affect our mood. If we have chronic infections or inflammation, Lyme, mold exposure can also contribute to fatigue and depression. And some medications at the same time can also worsen fatigue and anxiety. So really, when we're looking at mental health from a functional, holistic lens, we want to combine things like lab evaluations. So getting some blood work done through your doctor, through your functional practitioner, looking at things like hormone panels, that Dutch test, as I mentioned, Dutch Complete is one that I commonly run in my practice, and that gives a comprehensive overview of what your hormones are doing. We look at your cortisol levels, your estrogen, your progesterone, testosterone, your detoxification pathways, amongst other things as well. So we're really able to hone in and see where we need to make some modifications through diet and lifestyle and supplements as needed. We look at the sleep, the exercise, the movement, and that mental, emotional support. Lastly, I did just want to touch on digestive health. The gut is the mother of the body. And when she is unhappy, everything else is unhappy. Your hormones, your metabolism, energy, mood, that all can be influenced if our gut is not happy as well. So if you have some of those things that we talked about, candida overgrowth, bacterial imbalances, SIBO, low stomach acid, too much stomach acid, you're feeling constipated or loose stools, those are all signs that your digestive system needs a little bit of extra support. I'm talking about another functional test that I use is the GI map, which is a stool test, which gives a overview of what's actually going on in your gut. Sometimes it can be a little bit challenging to know exactly what's going on in the gut if things are out of balance, whether it's bacterial overgrowth, pathogens, even things like parasites. This lets us know what exactly is going on, shows how much good bacteria we have in our gut, bad bacteria, inflammation levels, how we're breaking down fats and proteins, and all those things as well. So that's another functional test that you could potentially look at. We can't heal what we don't understand, and you can't understand what you don't look at. So just some final thoughts to wrap this up. Mental health isn't just about managing the symptoms. It's about creating a body that feels safe and nourished and balanced so that our mind and our body can follow. When we start to stabilize our blood sugar, support hormones, replenish nutrients, manage stress, connecting to purpose, our energy, mood, and focus naturally begin to come back online. And that's really what holistic healing is all about. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love if you shared it with a friend who might be struggling or left a review so more women can find this kind of information. Until next time, nourish your body, calm your mind, and honor your hormones.